Welcome to Live Daf, your online Daf Yomi Shir.
Shalom Aleichem, welcome back to today's Daf Yomi, Shabbos Daf Nun Tes. Right on top of the Amid, at the first line, says the Gemara, Itmar Nami, we also learned. Now Gemara is responding to the question that we asked. Why is it that when we have a bell consists of two parts, it has the zug and the invil. The zug is the outer shell of the bell, and the invil is the clapper. So both are necessary components for the proper functioning of the bell, which is meant to produce a sound. Now, if one of these components go missing, if the bell is missing its clapper, nevertheless, we learned in a Braisa that since it was originally built properly, it contained both sections. Then when the clapper goes missing, the bell maintains its former status with regard to Kabbalah's Tumah. The question is why? The bell is not functioning any longer. Why is it still considered to be a Kli? It says in it's Manami, we learned also, meaning this was a Raya, a support to a Teres that Rava gave us, that the reason is as follows. The Gemara actually will give us two reasons. Number one, Omar Rabbi Yosef Rechanina, Hoyil V'roi La'akishoy Al-Gabi Cheres. Since this bell is still somewhat functional, it still has the ability to produce some sort of sound when we clap it on top of a Cheres. So we can take the outer shell of the bell and clap it on a Cheres and produce some type of sound, which is some sort of semblance to its original function, and therefore it is still metame. Once again, hoyel v'roy, since it is has the ability la'kishoy to go ahead and clap it al gagli cheres and to produce some sort of sound, so it still maintains its kli status and is not nullified altogether. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, hoyel v'roy l'gamei b'yimayim l'tinoik. We have a different reason. It's still functional. In what capacity? Because we can use it to fill it with water to feed a child. To feed a child with this, well, it can be used as a cup. So apparently Rabbi Yochanan doesn't require that there be a semblance to its former function. Even without the reason of the sound-producing capability by clapping it on a kli cheres, it's still functional, it's still usable. It still has a shimush. It can be used as a cup. So these are two answers, two reasons why the bell, whose clapper went missing, is still considered to be a kli. It still maintains its former status. A, because it can still produce a sound. B, because Rabbi Yochanan, regardless of that svara, it can still function somewhat. It still has a shimush, can be used as a cup. Says the Gemara, apparently, for Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yochanan implies that there's no need for there to be any semblance, any me'ein melacha rishayna, any resemblance to the former functioning capacity of the kli, even if it merely serves as a cup, it's sufficient, even without the reason of the ability to produce a sound. Is that so? That even if it merely has some sort of function, you still consider it and regard it as a kli, even though it lost its primary function, its former status as a sound producer. Va'atanya, but haven't we learned in the Braisa, which seems to indicate otherwise? Says the Gemara, we have a Braisa, and we have Rabbi Lezer, and we have Rabbi Yochanan, who come to give a explanation to the Braisa. And from Rabbi Yochanan's words, as he explains this Braisa, it would seem that he holds an opposing view. He holds that something needs to have a semblance to its former function in order to maintain its kli status, in order to be considered to be the same kli as it was before. Let's take a look. V'atani v'lentin abraisa v'chol kli asher yeshev olav. The pasuk speaking about a seat of a zav. A zav is a tamei, and if he sits on a seat, he makes that seat tumah, a very stringent form of tumah, a tumah of avatumah, even though he doesn't actually come into contact with that seat. Suppose there are things in between that are being mafsik, interrupting between the zav and the chair. Nevertheless, this is a unique tumah where a zav is metameh this chair, the seat, it becomes tamei. We call it in this Gemara tumas medras. Medras literally means to trample. So this is a term used this type of tumah. Since the zav sat on it, it becomes an avatumah. It becomes tumas moishav. So the pasuk once again says, v'chol kli asher yeshev olav. Any kli that the zav sits on becomes avatumah. Says the Gemara, perhaps I would think that anything that he decides to sit on becomes an avatumah. Yachal, perhaps I would think, kafa sa'a, he flips over a saw, this is a container which contains a saw, and he turns it upside down, and decides to sit on it, v'yashav aleha, or kafa tarkav, he takes a smaller measurement of a half a saw, so tarkav stands for the words trei v'kav, two, and another kav, for a total of three kav, which is half a saw, so a six kav. So he takes this container, this measuring container of a tarkav, which is not meant to be used as a seat. He flips it upside down and he sits down on it. Kafa tarkav yashvala. Yei tame, perhaps. Here too, the zav can be metame, these items, and make them into a avatuma by having them considered as a moishav hazav. They are tame tumas medras. Tamar loimar, the Torah teaches us no. The Torah uses a special nekuda here. It says, asher yeshev olav hazav. Why does the Torah use a word yeshev, which is has a constant connotation? Yeshev is hoive. It's something which is constant. Why doesn't it really say any kli on which the zav sat on, yoshev olav? Why does the pasuk choose to use the word yeshev with the nekuda of etzere yeshev? Apparently, the Torah is teaching us that it must be something which is suitable for yeshiva, something which is constantly used for sitting. Only something which is designated, which is appropriate to be sat on. To exclude this sa'a, this tarkav, which is not meant for sitting. They tell him, it's a euphemism, it's as though these kalim, these containers are turning to the zav and saying, get off of us, amoid, stand up. Let us do our work, let us do our job. Let's perform our function. We're here to be filled with grain or whatever it is, which we're meant to use as a measuring cup. We're not meant to be turned upside down and to be sat on. We're meant to contain something. So get off of us and let us do our work. So since these things are not designated, not meant to be sat on, the Torah tells us that these are not regarded as a moishav azav. They're not tamei tumas medras, and they don't become an avatuma in this manner. So you see clearly that with regard to tumas medras, tumas moishav hazav, we need something which is designated, which is suitable for yeshiva, for sitting on. Continues the Gemara. Reb Lezer Omer, so up until here was the price. Reb Lezer says as follows. B'medrasos oimrim amoid v'nas l'machtenu. When it comes to tumas medras, then indeed we apply this term, get off, let us do our work. Meaning that unless this item is suitable to be used as a moishav, as a seat, it will not turn into avatuma. However, when it comes to other tumas like tmei meis, we don't apply this principle. We don't say amoid v'nasu nachtein. Now, what does this mean? Explains Rashi. This applies twofold. Firstly, initially, in order for the thing to become tummy, there's a differentiation, the distinction between tumas medras of Ezov and ordinary tumas like tumas meis. As we just mentioned earlier, that only a thing which is designated, which is meant to be used for a seat to sit on, will become tummy through the Zov tumas medras. Similarly, once the item becomes tummy tumas medras, let's say, for instance, we have a piece of material which contains which has the size which is suitable for tumas midras, which is 3 tfachim by 3 tfachim. So Zav sits on it and becomes tumas midras. What if this piece of material gets split into two? And going forward, it's not really suitable for tumas midras. It's not meant to be sat on. It's too small to be sat on. Says the Gemara, it will lose its tumas midras since it's not anymore roi for yeshiva, roi for midras. It loses its status and is no more considered to be Tamei Tumas Medras. It becomes Torah purified from this Tumas Medras. So even though this piece of material can be used for other functions, it's still a piece of material, a significant piece of material. Nevertheless, since it doesn't have the dimensions which are suitable for Tumas Medrash, which is 3 Tfachim by 3 Tfachim, it loses that status, it loses that Tumah. So this concept is applied twofold. Whether initially it can't contract, it can't be makabel Tumas Medrash unless it's suitable for that. And number two, even once it became Tumah Tumas Medrash, it won't hold on to that Tumah. If it loses its dimensions, if it loses its designation, if it can't anymore be used, it's not suitable for sitting on. So that's with regard to Tumas Medrash. Says Rabbi Elazar, I want you to know, this only applies to Midrash, because we learned this from a Pasuk, Asher Yeshiv Elav, it needs to be something suitable. However, with regard to other Tumas, like Tumas Meis, over there we don't apply this concept whatsoever. Not initially, and not subsequently, meaning, any type of item which is a kli masa, something which is a utensil fit for function, for use, for any sort of use, is considered to be a proper kli. I can become tame by touching a mace, even if it's not designated for this mace. Similarly, once something becomes tame with a tumas mace, even if the kli is somewhat altered, even if it's not suitable for the original malacha, for instance, if we have a bell that became tummy, and now the clapper goes missing, according to Rabbi Elazar, we don't require that this item has to consistently do the same function, maintain its same shimush as it was doing when it was makabel that tumah. It became tameh when it was functioning as a bell, as a sound-producing bell. Now it lost its clapper. It can still serve in some sort of capacity. For instance, it can be used as a container, as a cup, to feed a child. Says Rabbi Elazar, that's also okay. It also maintains its tumah status. We don't say that amoid v'nasa malachteinu. We don't apply this concept of come, let us do our work. Meaning, even if it doesn't have the same function as it had originally, as long as it's still serving in some capacity, it's still considered to be a kli for something, it will retain its tumah status. So this change of function doesn't affect the status of tumah with regards to tumas meis. In contrast to tumas midras, where when the kli lost its midras function, it doesn't serve as a seat any longer. It's not suitable to be sat on. With regard to Tumas Midras, it will lose its Tumas Midras. It needs to maintain its designation, its suitability for seating, for Midras, in order to, number one, as we said, to be makabel that Tumah and to maintain that Tumah. Once again, regarding the Tumas Meis, we don't apply this principle whatsoever. It can be makabel Tumah even if it's not designated for the Meis. And number two, once it becomes tummy, even if its function underwent a transition, originally when it became tummy, it was being used for something, for one thing, and then for some reason it came apart and it changed, it altered its appearance, its physical properties, and now it's not serving any longer in that original capacity. It's serving in a different capacity. Again, like this bell, we're now serving as merely as a container, to legamea by imayim latinek, to serve a child some water. According to Reb Lezer, it will still be tummy. Let's take a look again inside. Reb Lezer Omer, b'medrasis, when it comes to Tumas Medrash, oimrim amoid v'nas machtein, we apply this concept, come let's do our work, meaning, don't interfere with us. You can't be metamos. Tumas Medrash won't apply unless it is meant to be sat on. So it can't be makabel tumah, it's meant to be sat on, and it will maintain its tumah if it loses that status. It's only tummy as long as it's still functioning as a seat. V'ein oimrim b'tumei meis. However, with regard to tumei meis, we don't say amoid v'nas lachteinu. We don't require that the kli is designated for this tumas meis. Whether with regard to initially having the ability to mekabel tumas meis, it can be mekabel that tumah, even if it's not designated to be used for this meis. Number two, even if it undergoes a transformation and the function of the kli, it changes somewhere in the middle. It is now serving a different purpose, a different function than it had been serving when it became tummy. we're not particular about it, and it still maintains its tumah. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Af Oimer b'tmei meis. Even when it comes to tmei meis, we apply this concept. Amoid v'nasa machtenu. Get up, let's do our work. Meaning, it needs to be performing the same function, or at least a semblance of the function which it had been performing when it was mekabel tumah. So if the kli undergoes a transformation, it will only maintain its tumah status if provided that it's still serving somewhat in a similar capacity. It'll still be mishamish me'ein the melacha rishayna. So in the case of a bell, for instance, if the clapper disappears, the only reason why the bell will still be tamei is because it can still produce a sound. It can still be clapped on a cheres. So it's still serving somewhat in its original capacity. It needs to continue doing its melacha to be tamei. So in any case, we see clearly that Rav Yochanan holds that the only reason a kli will maintain its tumah status when it comes apart is if it can somehow still be meshamish, the me'ein melacha rishayna, it can still have a semblance to its original function. So we have a stira, because back up on the beginning of the Amid, Rav Yochanan told us the reason why the zug is tamei without the invul, why is the bell without the clapper still tamei, because it can use it to feed the child. That's not a me'ein melacha rishayna. That's not a semblance of its original function. Says the Gemara, Eipach Kamaisa, let's switch around the opinions, the names. Meaning, in that original discussion with regard to the clapper that's missing from the bell, why is it tamei? We have two sheets. Rabbi Yezir Rechanina told us, because it can still produce a sound by being clapped on a cheres. The shell can still produce some sound, which is ma'ei melach reshayin. Rabbi Yochanan told us because it can serve as a cup. Let's switch things around. It was actually Rabbi Yochanan who said that the reason why it's tamei is because it can still perform ma'ei melach reshayin by producing a sound through clapping on a cheres. Let's switch around the names. Says, well, how do you know to switch those names around? Perhaps we should switch these names around. They're Blazer Rabbi Yochanan. And say that, well, no, Rabbi Yochanan does not require a semblance of the Melacha Rishayna, as he had stated back up on the beginning of the Amud. It's this Rabbi Yochanan who got mixed up. These names will switch around. Rabbi Yochanan the Braisa should be switched to Rabbi Lezer and not require Mei Melacha Rishayna. Says the Gemara once again, Eifach Chamaisa, let's switch around, reverse the names in the original discussion, in the initial discussion. Says the Gemara, Mai Chazis, why do you choose, why do you prefer, how do you know? The Afas Kamaisa, to reverse those names. Eifach Mas Raisa, switch around the names in the second discussion. Says the Gemara, I have a reason why I prefer that approach. Why? Hashamini le Rabbi Yochanan. Because we heard elsewhere that indeed Rabbi Yochanan holds the boy mei melacha rishayna. Rabbi Yochanan requires a semblance mei melacha rishayna. How do we know that? This is not as we learned in the Mishnah. Sandal shal behema shal matechas tamei. There's a metal shoe of a behema, for instance, like a horseshoe, a tamei, it's mekabel tumah. And the question is, how come something which serves a behema is mekabel tumah? We know that a tachshit or a malbush of a behema is not metame, doesn't become tamei. So why is this different? Why is this sandal shel behema, this shoe used for behema, tamei? Says Rav Lemay Chazi, what is it serving for? What benefit can it be serving that will give it the grounds, that will serve the basis for its tumah? Says the Gemara, it's actually serving the Adam, the person. In what capacity? Omar Rav, Roy Lishtes B'mayim B'machama. So the question was, L'may Chazi, how is it serving the person? Says Rav, yes indeed, it can serve a person by using it to drink from it. Lishtes B'mayim B'machama. So one can use it to drink from it water during wartime in the battlefield. So indeed, it's considered to be a kli shimush of an adam, and therefore it's mekabel tumah. Rav Chanina Amar, a different reason. Roy, it's suitable lasach by shema melchama to fill it with oil and to anoint oneself from this oil contained in this shoe. apparently it has some containing ability. So in the Melchama, wartime, they use it for that. So since it has the ability to serve in that capacity, it's considered to be a shimush for an adam. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, third reason. It's actually serving the person in this manner. When a person flees the battlefield, flees the battle, he will place it on his feet, use it as a shoe, to protect him from the thorns. Vrats al koitzim al barkanim, run on the thorns and the thistles, so it protects him from injury. So he's using it as some sort of shoe. And therefore, it is mekabel tumah, because it is serving the Adam in this capacity. Now the fact of Rabbi Yochanan to give us this reason. Why is this sandal shebehema mekabel tumah? Because it is serving the Adam, not merely as a container to drink from it, to be sach shemen from it. Rabbi Yochanan insisted that the reason is because the person uses it as a shoe. So you see clearly that since it's only because of this reason, because it is still serving the Adam in a similar capacity as the sandal was fashioned for. It was fashioned to be used as a shoe for a behemoth, and it can still serve an Adam in this capacity. Apparently, we need a connection, we need a correlation. It needs to be serving me'ayim melacha rishayna. We can't simply say that, well, it's going to be a tamei, become tamei, because it is a sandal behemoth. Even though it's a sandal behemoth, it will become kabel tumah, because it can serve an adam in an entirely different context. That's not sufficient. To give it a kli status, to maintain its kli status, it needs to serve me'ayim melacha rishayna. Since it was designated, it was fashion to be used as a shoe, the only way that it will be mekabel tumah is if indeed it can serve in a similar capacity for an adam as well. So you see the quote of Yochanan, we require me'ayin malacha rishayna, it needs to serve in a similar capacity as the initial intent. Here too, now Gemara with the bell. The only reason why it's tummy when it loses its interval, its clapper, is because it can still currently pleasantly serve, function, me'ein lach rishoina, to produce a sound which is a semblance of its earlier original intention and function. Okay, so therefore we conclude that evidently the names of the initial discussion between Rabbi Yosef Bar Chanina and Rabbi Yochanan need to be switched around, need to be reversed. It was Rabbi Yochanan who maintained that the reason why the bell is metame is because it can still serve in its original function, original context, me'ayim lach rishayna, and can produce a sound by clapping on cheres. So Rabbi Yochanan is consistent. He holds, you need me'ayim lach rishayna, it needs to produce a sound. And as Rabbi Yochanan told us later on, that with regard to Tmei Meis, we apply the rule of Amoid v'nas l'nachteinu, it needs to still serve in a similar capacity in order for it to maintain its tumah. And Rav Yochanan, finally, regarding the sandal shel behemah as well, tells us the only reason why the sandal shel behemah is tameh, it was intended to be used as a shoe for the behemah. Now, even though the person is using it to drink from it, etc., that's not sufficient to maintain its tumah status, to grant it a tumah status, to regard it as a shoe, which is mekabel tumah, because using a shoe to drink from it doesn't grant the shoe any significance. It is a complete changeover. It's a different function. Rechon says the only reason why the sandal shel behemah is regarded as a kli is because it can serve the adam as well in a similar function to be used as a shoe. Concludes the Gemara. Okay, we have three reasons for the sandal shel behemah. Either because one can drink from it, one can use it to fill it with oil and to anoint himself, and finally to run away from the battlefield. Says, well, what is the halachic nafkamina? Is there a halachic ramification between these different approaches, these different reasons? My bein Rav Lev Chanina. What is the difference? Is there a halachic nafkamina between Rav's reason that it's roi lishtes b'mayim and Rav Chanina that it's roi losach b'shemen? Says the Gemara, the difference will be in a case, if it's repulsive and it's not suitable to be used for a cup. So according to Rav, it's tar, according to Rav Chanina, can still be used to fill it with oil, and therefore it's tamei. Ben Rav Yochanan, the Rav Chanina, what can be a difference between Rav Yochanan, who tells us the reason is because one uses it to run away from the battlefield, and Rav Chanina says it's meant to be filled with oil, Ikar b'nai, the difference is the yakir, if it's heavy, so it can still be used to fill it with oil, but one will not use it to run with it from the battlefield. Therefore, it will be tar. So in summary, we learned that in order for something to be makabel tumas medras, to be considered to be a moishav hazav, a seat of hazav, it needs to be royal yeshiva, suitable for sitting on it. You can't simply take a container and flip it over and decide to sit on it. Yes, that indeed is a requirement. And not only is it a requirement initially for the kabbalas tuma, but even once it became tame, it will only retain that status as long as it's still usable for yeshiva. What about other tumas like tmei meis? Does it need to be roi mei melach terishoina? So once it becomes tame, and its use, its function was altered, its shape was altered, and it's no longer serving the initial capacity, is that still tame? We have a machlokes. According to the final version of the Gemara, Rabbi Yochanan holds that yes, it needs to still maintain its former function. It needs to maintain a semblance, at least, of its former function in order for it to retain its tumi status. According to Rabbi Lezer, that's not required. As long as it's still somewhat functioning, it's being mishamish in some capacity, that is sufficient. We conclude with the Gemara about the sandal shel behema, the horseshoe. Why is it tame? Because it's serving the Adam. We have three reasons. It's serving the Adam to drink from it, to use it to fill it with oil, or to run from the battlefield. Continues the Gemara. V'loy be'ir shel zav. The Mishnah told us an Isha may not walk out on Shusra. I'm wearing the ir shel zav. My be'ir shel zav. What exactly is this? Says the Gemara. Rava Rechana Rav Yechanan Yishalayim de Dahava. It's a gold piece of jewelry which contains an emblem of Yerushalayim, which is depicted on it. Just as the one that Rav Akiva made for his wife, the Gemara in Nedarim teaches us that there was a whole incident that they were very poor, and Rav Akiva told us, if I'll have money, I'll get you this piece of jewelry. And indeed, according to the Gemara here, he indeed fulfilled his promise. So this is the Ir Shazav that we're speaking about, the piece of jewelry which contains the emblem or the engraving of a Yerushalayim on it. And Isha may not walk out into Shisarabim wearing this. Tanur Rabbanan learned in the Brides, Lo Yiseitzei Isha B'Ir Shazav. She should not go out wearing this Ir Shazav. V'im Yotzusa Chayeves Chatas. If she does so, she's Chayeva Chatas. We consider as though she's carrying a load. Divrei Rav Meir. So this is a Malacha Min HaTorah. Kodra Meir. Apparently it's too significant, too elegant to be considered a mere tachshit, a piece of jewelry. It's considered an item, a masri, a load, a burden, and it is a melacha derais. The chachamim aimim, no. Lo yiseitzei. Indeed, she should not go out wearing it. But it's only midrabbanan. V'miyatza sabtura. If she goes out, she's pater, meaning, minatayra. It's not considered to be a load. It's considered to be a tachshit, an ornamental item, and therefore, it's not a masri. Midrabbanan, however, they said it's also to walk out with these tachshitim, once again for concern that the Isha may remove it and display it to a friend, and this may result in carrying the item in Shusarabim. Rab Lezo Eimer, a third shita, Yoytze Isha, Bi'ir Shazov L'chatchila. Even initially L'chatchila, she's allowed to go out wearing this Ir Shazov. Says the Rabbi Mike Miflagi, what is the basis for these opinions? Says the Gemara, Rab Meir Savar Masuhu, it's considered to be a load. Therefore, it is a Melach Menatur. Rabbanan Savar Tashatu. It's a piece of jewelry, it's an ornament. So Menat Torah, there's no Melach taking place. However, Dilma Sholfa Mechvayale. There's a concern that perhaps she might remove it, Umechvayale, and display it. V'asi Lasuye, she may go ahead and carry it in Shesurabim. Therefore, the Chachamim prohibited the Isha from carrying it, from wearing it. For Rabbi Elazar Savar, there's no concern whatsoever. Why? Man darka lemepak. Who is accustomed to go out wearing Bir Shazav? It's not something for the ordinary woman. Isha chashuva. It's only meant for a Isha Chashuva, a distinguished woman. Visha Chashuva, and indeed a distinguished woman, Lo Yimeshafa Mechvaya, she will not remove it to display it. It's not something becoming of Isha Chashuva. Therefore, there's no concern whatsoever. Says Rabbi Lezer, and Isha Chashuva, who's wearing this Irsha Zav, is allowed to do it without any concern because she certainly won't remove it and display it. So once again, we have three shittas regarding the Isha Zav. Rabbi Meir says, it is not considered to be an ordinary tachshit. It's considered to be a masoi on account of its significance. It's considered to be a piece of gold. It's not merely a tachshit which is bottle subordinate to the wearer. Therefore, one who wears it outside is carrying an item, carrying a load. Chayev chatas. According to Rabbi Lezer, it's mutl chatchila because this is something unique which is only worn by an isha chashuva who will not remove it to display it to her friend. Rabbanon maintain it's asur. Chacham hold it's asur mid the Rabbanon for concern that she might remove it to display it. Now Tosis points out that although Rabbi Lezer tells us that an isha chashuva is not tempted to remove her item and show it to her friend, however, we only find this leniency applied to the Irshel Zav because this is something which is unique, which is worn specifically only by Isha Chashuva. The Chacham did not include it in their Gzeira. However, an ordinary tash, an ordinary piece of jewelry which is worn by everybody, there the Chacham did not differentiate between what type of woman is wearing it. They applied the Gzeira broadly, wall to wall, universally. Every Isha cannot wear Tachshitin, and we don't go ahead and differentiate between this type of woman, that type of woman. That's dangerous. We don't want to get into that, and we apply it broadly to all equally. It's only this Irsha Zav because this is something out of ordinary. It's not included in the regular, in the ordinary repertoire of Tachshitin. It's something specifically designated to Isha Chashuva. So this was never included in the initial Gzeira of Isur Tachshitin Rishus Rav. Continues the Gemara. What about klila? Klila is a type of ornament, type of tachshit, which is worn on the forehead. Now, there are two ways, two manners to fashion this klila. It can be done as a flattened out piece of gold or silver, so it's a metal plate, or it can be fashioned, it can be formed in a different manner. A piece of material which contains gold accents, gold on it, and some diamonds, perhaps. So, there are two forms of this kalila. Says Gemara, is this allowed on Shabbos or not? Kalila Rav Asar. Rav says, no, it's Asar to wear it. Ushmol Shari Shmol says it's permitted. Says Gemara, let's analyze the machlekes. The Anischa, this kalila that is made of metal, it's a plate of gold or silver, Kuli Amalei Pliga de Asar. All agree that it's Asar because it's chashev, it's elegant, it's significant, and there's a chashash that she will remove it to display it. So even Shmuel agrees that it's us. When then is there the machlekes, the dispute? Ki pli? When is the disagreement? The arukta. When it's made of material and it has on it some zav, some gold, and some diamonds on it. So there, in that case, there indeed is a machlekes between Rav and Shmuel. Mar sava anischa ikar. Rav holds, she may not wear it. Why? Because the anischa, meaning the gold that is contained, that is embedded in this material, the anischa, the gold that's there, is ikar, is the primary element of chashivas, of significance, of importance. We focus on the anischa, on the gold. Therefore, on account of its elegance and significance, she might remove it to show it to a friend. Therefore, Rav holds, she cannot wear this klila, even if it's made of material. Umar Savar Shmuel says it's okay. Why? Aruk Seikar. The material is regarded as the primary element of this klila, and is not regarded as such a significant, elegant item. It's viewed as a material item. It's not considered to be a elegant and chashiv tachshit that would tempt her to remove it and display it to a friend. So that's the first approach in the Gemara. So once again, regarding this klila, Rav says it's aser, Shmuel says it's mutter. According to this approach in the Gemara, when it's completely metal, it's a metal plate of gold and silver, all agree that it's aser on account of its elegance. If it's comprised mainly of material, which is embedded with some ornaments of gold and etc. There, Rav holds, it's still usher on account of its chashivas, of its elegance, because of the gold that's there, which is regarded as the primary element. According to Shmuel, we regard the material as the primary element, and it is regarded as an insignificant type of item, which she will not be tempted to show to her friends. Continues Gemara, we have another approach, a more lenient approach. Rashi Masni Lekula. He adopted a more lenient approach and presented the opinions leniently. The aruksa kuli amale pliga de shari. When this kli is made of aruksa, of material, with the embedded gold on it, etc., all agree that it's mutter because it's not considered to be significant enough for her to display to her friends. So all agree that it's mutter to wear it on Shabbos. Ki pligi, when then is there machlekes? Dan ischa, when it's made entirely of the plate of gold and silver. In that case, indeed, there's a machlekes. Mar savar, dilma sholfa mechvaya. Rav holds it's aser. Dilma, perhaps, sholfa shall remove it to mechvaya to display it to a friend. Va'asir asuyi, and this may result in it being carried. Umar savar, Shmuel holds it's mutter. Why? Man darka lemeifak. Bechlila, who is accustomed to wearing this elegant klila, this plate of gold or silver? Isha chashuva, once again we're speaking about a distinguished woman. Visha chashuva lo yisholfa mechvaya. And isha chashuva is not tempted to remove it. It's below her dignity to remove it, to display it to her friends. So according to Rav Ashi, we have a lenient approach to the machlokes of Rav and Shmuel. When this clearly consists of material, it is mutter on account of its insignificance. Even though it has some jewelry on it, it's not significant enough to be displayed. She won't remove it in Shus Rav. The machlokes applies to a kalila which is anischa, which is a plate of gold and silver, which is very significant and elegant. According to Rav, there's a concern that she might remove it to display it and carry it. According to Shmuel, there's no such concern because a kalila of this sort is worn by a isha chashuva who would not be tempted to remove it and display it. Continues the Gemara, continuing on the subject of kalila. Amalei, Rav Shmuel, bar bar chano Rav Yosef. So he told Rav Yosef as follows: Beferish Amerson, you specifically, explicitly told us, Mishmei Rav, the name of Rav, Klila Shari. One is allowed to wear a Klila on Shabbos. Explains Rashi. Apparently, he was telling to Rav Yosef that apparently, you adopted the view of Rav Ashi that holds that when it is comprised of material aruksa, all agree that it's mutter. Even Rav agrees that it's mutter. Evidently, you followed that opinion. You took that approach to the sheet to the machlokes Rav and Shmuel. Therefore, when you told us in the name of Rav, that even Rav holds that a klila is mutter, apparently, it was pertaining to a klila made of material. And therefore, even Rav agrees that it's mutter. So apparently, Rav Yosef adopts the approach of Rav Ashi to the discussion of Rav and Shmuel. Continues the Gemara. Omer lei l'Rav. So they told Rav as follows. Also, Gavarabba, a great person, came, a Gavarabba Aricha, who was tall, Lenardo, he came to Nardo, Umitala, and he's limping. Vidorash, and he taught as follows, that Kalila Shari, one is allowed to wear a Kalila on Shabbos. Apparently, he's permitting in any case, whether it's material or metal. Okay, so this is what they presented to Rav. This is tall person, a great person, who is limping, who came to Nardo, and allows a klila to be worn on Shabbos. Omar, so Rav responded, he said, Man gava rabba richa, who is this great person who was tall, the itla, who became limp? Levi, this was actually Levi, as the Gemara explains elsewhere, that he was performing something in front of Rebbe, some sort of acrobatic posture, and he was harmed, he was injured. He started limping as a result of that. So Rav referred to Levi as the person. Apparently he's the person that came. And I can infer from this, the fact that this occurred, that he came along, and he came to Nardo, and left his former location. Shmamina, we can infer from this, that Noch Nafshe, the Rebbe Ephes, that Rebbe Ephes passed away. V'yosef, Rebbe Chanina Bereisha, and Rebbe Chanina became the head of the academy at Rosh Hashiva. So it was Rav Ephes who was initially the Rosh HaYeshiva. He must have passed away. And in turn, Rabbi Chanina took his place, became the Rosh Hashiva. And Rabbi Chanina was the study partner. He kept Levi company. The fact that he became the Rosh Hashiva, v'lo yahava le'inish, le'Levi, Levi did not have any more a person, a company, le'meisagay, to sit by him. Meaning he didn't have a chavrusi, he didn't have company any longer. Because Rabbi Chanina went into the Beis Medrash, became the Rosh Hashiva. And therefore, as a result of that, because he had nobody to associate with, and therefore he got up and came over here to Nardo. So that was Rav's interpretation of these events. The fact that Levi came, apparently, it's an indication that the Rosh Yeshiva Eves passed away, Rav Chama took over, Rav Chanina took over, and Levi was lonely, and therefore he came alone to Nardo. Says the Gemara, okay, but how are you so sure this was the chain of events? Perhaps things occurred a bit differently. V'dilma, perhaps noch nafshi Rabbi Chanina. It was Rabbi Chanina who was Shmuel's partner. He was the one who passed away. Rabbi Efes the koy koy. Rabbi Efes was Rosh Hashiva. He remained in place. He's alive and well. Why then did Levi come along? Because Levi's chavrusa passed away. Very simple. Levi did not have any person to sit with him. And therefore, he came to Nardo. So as Rav know to conclude from this incident, and the fact that Levi comes to Nardo, that it was the Rosh Hashiva of Ephesus who passed away, Rav Chanina takes over, and Shmuel leaves his post and comes here as a result of that. Perhaps Rav Ephesus is alive and well. It was Rav Chanina who was Levi's study partner who passes away. As a result, Levi came. Says the Gemara, that cannot be so. Why? Because if it was Rav Chanina who actually passed away, then Levi would not have come here. Levi l'Rav Ephes make a kaifle. Levi would simply have entered the yeshiva and been subordinate to Rav Ephes, because Rav Ephes was older than him, and therefore he wouldn't have any qualms about being kaifif, subordinating himself to Rav Ephes in the yeshiva. So apparently that's not what took place. That's not what happened. Apparently it was Rav Ephes who passed away. Rav Chanina took over. Now Rav Chanina was not greater than Levi. Therefore, he found it difficult to enter the yeshiva of Rav Chanina and to be kafif to him, so to subordinate himself to the Rosh Yeshiva of Chama. Therefore, he avoided that situation and left his position and came here. So that's one reason, one way that Rav figured out the truth. The fact that Levi came and left his position indicates that it was Rav Ephes who passed away, because otherwise, if it was Rav Chanina who would have passed away, Levi would have had no problem entering the yeshiva and subordinating himself to Rav Ephes. That's the first reason. V'su, another reason. The Rav Chanina lo yisagid le'malach. It cannot possibly be that Rav Chanina would not assume the mantle of the Rosh Yeshiva. Why? D'chiyav ha'konicha nafshi de Rebbe. Because when Rebbe was passing away, Omar, he announced as follows: Chanina b'Rav Chama yosef b'Rosh. Rav Chanina b'Rav Chama should take the helm, should become the Rosh Yeshiva. Uksivu with tzaddikim, and the pasuk describes that when discussing tzaddikim, it says v'atigzur oimer v'yakim lach. So when the tzaddik will make a gzeru decree, Hashem will fulfill. So the fact that Rebbe uttered those words indicated that Rav Chanina bar Chama will become the Rosh Yeshiva. Apparently, that needs to come to fruition, and therefore Rav knew that it must be that it was Rav Ephes who passed away. Rav Chanina took over that position, indeed, being a kind of gzera of Rebbe, and as a result, Levi left the area and came to Nardo. So once again, the sequence of events was as follows. Rebbe, prior to his p'tira, announced that Rav Chanina will take over the helm and become the Rosh Yeshiva. So it seems like he instructed Rav Chanina to take over the position, but the Gemara tells us Rav Chanina refused the position. Why? Because Rav Ephes was older than him, was 25 years older than him. Therefore, Rav Ephes ended up assuming that position. Now, the fact that he was the Rosh Yeshiva made it difficult for Rav Chanina to enter the yeshiva, because on account of Rav Chanina's great stature, so therefore he remained outside of the yeshiva. But he was lonely, he was one alone, so Levi decided to keep him company and join him out of the yeshiva. In Al-Gemara, we see that the sequence of events was as follows. after that happened. Later on, Rav Ephes passes away. Rav Chanina, indeed, now is willing to assume the position of Rosh Yeshiva. Levi is left all alone, comes to Narda. Okay, getting back to our discussion regarding the Kalila, this ornament worn on Shabbos, indeed, Darash Levi. Levi taught Benarda. He taught Benarda as follows, Kalila Shari, one may wear the Kalila. As a result of this announcement, Nafik, they went out, Esrim V'arba, 24 Kalila of these Kalila, 24 women wearing this Kalila went out in the Shusarabim, Mikula Narda, from the entire city of Narda. Dorash Rabba Ravua, B'mechoyza. So Rabba Ravua announced a similar teaching in the city of Mechoyza, Kalila Shari, a Kalila is permitted. And as a result of this announcement, what happened? V'nafku, Tamni Sri Kalili, 18 women wearing, carrying this Kalila on Shabbos came out, Michadam Avoya, from one single alleyway of Mechoyza. So as a result of this announcement, from one alleyway alone, 18 women came out on Shabbos wearing this Kalila. Continues the Gemara, Omar Rav Yehuda, Omar Rav Shmuel. Kamra, Shori, Kamra is an ornamental belt, it can be worn on Shabbos. Explains the Gemara, Ikad Amri, some say we're speaking about a Kamra, which is made the Aruksa of material, which is studded with gold and diamonds, and it's mutter to wear it on Shabbos. Why? Vom Rav Safra. The reason is midi dehava, because it is akin and equated to a talis mishevis, as though one is wearing a gold embroidered garment. Certainly that's mutter. The Issa d'Rabbanan only applies to tachshitin, to items of jewelry, which may be removed to display, but doesn't apply to a garment, as elegant as it may be. So this kamra, which consists of a material studded with gold and diamonds, is considered to be a malbush, a article of clothing, it's a belt, therefore it's mut. Vikadami, some say we're speaking about a belt, this kamra is danischa, which is a plate of gold or silver, it's not made of material, and still it's mutta to be worn on Shabbos, because it's regarded as a belt, as an article of clothing, as a garment. Vamar Rav Safra, why? Midi dehava, avnei shemalachim, because the fact is that malachim, kings wear this type of belt made of a flat piece of gold or silver, and since it's regarded as an article of clothing, a garment for a king, says Rashi, Kol Yisrael b'nei malachim, all of Klal Yisrael regarded as sons of part of a royal family, Hashem's children. Therefore, we indeed may wear this ornamental belt, even if it resembles the royal belts, is considered to be an article of clothing, a beged, and there's no concern of removal to display. Omali Ravina Ravashi, Kamra Ilovei Hemyonamai, can one wear on top of his Hemyona, which is the ordinary belt, can he wear this Kamra, his ornamental belt? He's basically wearing a double belt. Can this be done on Shabbos? Or is it considered to be carrying? Why does he need two belts for? Omali, indeed, Ravashi told him, Terei Hemyona Kamra, we're speaking about two belts. Certainly that's Aser. It's redundant. It's considered to be carrying a masri. Omer Ravashi, Hayri Sukkah, this wide styled coat, can that be worn on Shabbos? E Islema Frachaisa, if it has strands, it has straps, and it can be fastened to the wearer, Shari, then it's mutter. V'iloi, but otherwise it's aser because it may slip off and result in being carried on Shabbos. So in conclusion, we learned about the halacha of Kalila, that there's a machlekes between Rav and Shmuel. Rav says it's also to wear the Kalila on Shabbos, Shmuel says it's mutter. The Gemara has two approaches. Number one, according to the first approach in the Gemara, if the Kalila is made of a flat plate of gold or silver, all agree that it's usr on account of its elegance, it may be removed for display. If it's made of a material studded with gold and diamonds, according to Rav, it's usr, because she may remove it to display it, according to Shmuel, it's mutter, because it's regarded simply as an item, a material item, of lacking significance in chashivas, and there's no concern about removal for display. According to the second version of the Gemara, when it is made of beged, all agree that it's mutter. The machlekes is only when it's made of the gold and silver. It consists of a plate of gold and silver, according to Rav, it's aser for concern that she might display it, according to Shmuel, it's mutter, because who wears this type of ornament, an isha chashuva, a woman, a distinguished woman who will not remove it to display. We concluded that, according to Levi and Rabba Baravua, a Kalila may be worn on Shabbos. We continue with the Kamra, this ornamental belt. That too is mutter. According to one approach in the Gemara, we're speaking about made of material. According to the other approach, we're speaking about even made of plate of gold and silver regarded as a belt, as a garment, and therefore there's no concern of removal to this plate. Regarding a double belt, that certainly is aser, and this wide styled coat, only if it has straps and will be fastened down, is it mutter b'dibur on Shabbos. Continues the Gemara. The Mishnah told us of Eloi b'katla, she may not wear this katla and shesurabim. My katla, what is this? Menakta pa'ari. It's a certain ornamental article of clothing which has a strap which goes around the neck, and this is considered to be a takshit. Again, there's a concern that she might remove this thing to display it to her friend. Continues the Gemara, nizamim. That too may not be worn. What is this? Nizmeyaf, nose rings. Esther just points out that earrings are okay due to their the difficulty in removing them. V'loy betabas she'en alechaisen. She may not be wearing a tabas, a ring, which has no signet, has no seal in it. It's considered to be a tachshit. Nevertheless, there's a concern she might remove it to display. Says the Gemara, we imply from here, that if it would have a choysim, a signet, it would be considered to be a masui. It would not only be usher to wear a midrabbanan for concern about removal for display, it would be considered to be a load, a burden. Why? Because an isha is not accustomed to wearing a ring with a signet. That's something that's designed for men to seal and to seal their letters and the packages. It's men's business. A woman does not adorn herself with a ring that contains a chaysim. It's considered to be a masui. And if she would wear it on Shabbos, should be chai v'chatas. Says the Gemara, ho yeshaleh chaysim. We imply from here that if it would have a chaysim, chayeves, should be chai v'chatas. Alma, apparently, lav tachshatu. It's not regarded as a article of an adornment for an isha, since it has a chaysim. V'ra minhu. We have a kasha from the following Mishnah. Tachshite noshim tmeim. Mishnah tells us that women's jewelry, amakamal tuma. Ve'elu ein tachshite noshim. What are they? Katlois, chokers, nezamim, earrings, v'tabois, rings, v'tabas, bein shel yesh alei choysim, bein shel ein alei choysim, whether it has a choysim or does not, is considered to be a tachshite noshim and is makabel tuma. The Mishnah continues with v'nizmeyaf and the nose rings as well. So we have a contradiction. In our Mishnah, we see that if it has a choysim, it's not regarded as a tachshit for an isha. In the Mishnah in Kalim, we see otherwise. Omer of Zer Leikasha is not difficult. We'll resolve it as follows. They reflect two different opinions. Hor Rav Nechemya. Our mission reflects the Shtiv Rav Nechemya, who says we focus on the signet, on the seal, and a tabas, which has a signet, is not considered to be a tachshit. Hor Rabbanon. The mission in Kalim, which regards a ring with a chosim as a tachshit from Isha, is following Shitas Rabbanon, who focus on the ring itself. They consider the ring itself as the primary element of importance and significance and determines the status of the ring. We disregard the chaysim. Therefore, even if it has a chaysim, it's still considered to be a tashda v'nisha. The sign is willing to the price. He shamateches v'chaysim shal almag. If we have a ring which is made of metal, but the chaysim signet is almag coral, tumeya, this ring is makavatuma, because although the mateches ring does not have a clay kibble, doesn't have the capacity to contain something, it is not a container. Nevertheless, we know that a kli mateches is mekabel tumah, even if it's something which doesn't contain pshute kli matches on mekabel tumah. Therefore, this ring is mekabel tumah. But in the reverse, he shall almag, if the ring itself is made of almag, this coral material, which is considered like an eitz, and an eitz needs to be a kli which is mekabel. It needs to be a receptacle in order to be mekabel tumah. So if we have the ring of almag, but the chaysama shamatechas, although the signet is made of metal, tahira, we regard it as a kli which is not makabatum, because we look at the ring itself as the focal, as the main element. It's the focal point of this item. It is what determines the status of this item. And therefore, since the ring itself is eitz, and the eitz here is not a receptacle, it's not a kli kibul, it is considered to be tor. So this is the shita of the Tanakama, who say we focus on the ring itself, on the body of the ring itself, not on the signet contained therein. Rav Nechemya says, no, we must focus on the signet which enables the functionality of this ring, and therefore when we have the ring of almag of eitz, but it contains a signet of mateches, it will be makabotuma on account of the signet of mateches. Show you Rav Nechemya used to say as follows. We must follow this formula. Always look at the element which provides the functionality, which enables the use. For instance, betabas, by a ring, we follow the signet. That determines the status of the ring. Be'oil, when we have a yoke, some loinav, the pegs, which enable its function. Be'koilav, we have a stand, which was meant to hang merchandise in front of the store, had these nails attached to it, so that the stand is cleats, and it's not mekabel tumah, but on account of its nails, it will be mekabel tumah. Once again, be'koilav, with this stand, follow the nails. So we're speaking about different examples of kelim, which are cleats, which will not be mekabel tumah in their form. However, since we choose to focus on those elements that enable the functionality, which are matches, which are made of metal, therefore the whole entire kli is mekabel tumah. So once again, we discuss the ring on account of its signet. We discuss the wooden yoke on account of its metal pegs. We discuss the coil of this beam, this pole, this stand, which follows the metal nails. Bisulam, regarding a wooden ladder, halicha hashli voice, follow the rungs. If they're metal, an entire sulam is makabal tumah. Ba'arsa, a scale, halich achash shaloisa, follow the chains. Although the horizontal and vertical poles are made of cleats, not makabal tumah, but the chain which holds the weighing pans, they are what determine the status of the kli, since they enable functionality. So this is the shita of Rabbi Nechemiah. The chachamim know. We follow the element of the kli which supports the kli, which is mamid the kli. We don't follow the signet, for instance, by the ring. We follow the ring itself, which supports, which upholds the signet. That's considered to be the essential element of this kli, and therefore they disagree. They hold that a wooden ring, although it contains a metal signet, is considered to be a kliyat, not mekabel tumah. So getting back to our stereo contradiction, when we have a ring which contains a chosam, according to Rabbi Nechemiah, it is not regarded as a kli tachshit for a woman. Why? On account of its signet, which is inappropriate for a woman. It's not regarded as an item of adornment for a woman. We focus on the signet, which is the main element here, which enables the functionality of the ring. So indeed, our Mishnah is following Shitas Rav Nechemiah, who doesn't regard it as a kli tachshit for an isha. However, the Mishnah in Kelim, which tells us that what is an example of a woman's jewelry tachshit, a tabas, even if it has a signet, is following Shitas Rabbanan, who choose to focus on the mamid, on the ring itself, which upholds and supports the signet, and we regard it as a tachshit for an isha. We disregard, we ignore the signet. The ring itself is a ring, and it is a tachshit for an isha. So even if it contains a signet, we regard it as a jewelry, a tachshit for an isha. Rava Amar, I'll give you a different answer to the theorem. Let's dadim ktani. We must reinterpret the Mishnah in Kelim. The Mishnah says, tachshite nashim tmeim, and goes on to list examples, chokers, earrings, etc. Then the Mishnah proceeds to discuss rings. Bein sheyesh alei choysam, that's referring to a tachshit of an ish. And then, Bein She'en Aleh Choysam is referring to the Tachshit of an Isha. So the Mishnah is discussing two different concepts. It begins by opening with Tachshit Enoshim, then proceeds and also enumerates something which is a Tachshit of an Ish, which is a Tabash, She'esh Aleh Choysam. Again, Rav Amar, let's start with Tani. The Mishnah is discussing two different things. Ye'esh Aleh Choysam, if it has a signet, Tachshit Ish, then indeed it's only regarded as a Tachshit of an Ish and not a Tachshit of an Isha. If it doesn't have a signet, then indeed it's tachshit isha, and this indeed concurs with our Mishnah that only a ring which does not have a signet is considered to be a tachshit of an isha. Rav Nachman Yitzchak Amar, there was never any contradiction to begin with between our Mishnah and Shabbos and the Mishnah and Kelim, because that clause in the Mishnah and Kelim which references a tabas that has a chosam is not in regards to Shabbos, but rather in regards to Kabbalah's tumah. It's a kli and Kabbalah's tumah. Says the more inside, Tumah, ah, Shabbos, Karamis. You mean to ask a contradiction between Hilchas Tumah and Hilchas Shabbos? There's no connection. They go by a different set of rules. Tumah, when it comes to Kabbalah's Tumah, Kli Masam Rachmanah. Torah says any Kli which performs a function is a Kabbalah Tumah. Uklihu, this Tabas as well, even though it has a Chosam, it's considered to be a Kli. Certainly is a Kli, performs a function, and is a Kabbalah Tumah. However, Shabbos, when it comes to Shabbos, Mishum Masam Rachmanah, it goes by entirely different criterion. The Torah says it depends if it's a load or not. So if ein aleich chosim, if it has no signet, tachshit is considered to be an ornament for a woman. Yesh aleich chosim, if it has a signet, masi is considered to be a load. So yes, a tabas that has a chosim, certainly with regard to Shabbos, it's a load. However, it's still mekavel tumah. So in summary, regarding a tabas, if it has no chosim, it's considered to be a tachshit for an isha, tachshit for an isha, and it's mekavel tumah. But if it has a chosim, according to Rabbi Chemia, it's not considered to be a tachshit for an isha because we focus on the signet, which is the focal point of this tabas, and is not considered to be an ornament for an isha. According to Rabban, we focus on the actual ring, and we regard it as a tachshit. We ignore the signet. With regards to an isha, it certainly is a tachshit, and certainly is mekavel tumah.